Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode 130 for April 24th, 2008. On today's show, U.S. spies are being trained by playing PC games. One tip, spies, Tiberium isn't real. NASA's gaming payload becomes a freeload. Crazy Intel cuts the prices of its quad-core processors in half. Everything must go. Blizzard says Nove to Uve. Epic's Mark Rain undooms PC gaming. And, on our Jack Thompson watch, Jack Dunn told on the chairman of Take-Two Interactive to his mama. All this in a brand new edition of Master PC Theater right after the musical break. I'm Chuck Osborne, Senior Executive Editor, and I'll be your host this week. We're joined today by our Editor-in-Chief, Kristen Salvatore. Who
Hi.
Has the giggles for some reason.
Hi, welcome.
Senior Editor Logan Decker.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Laughing Gas.
Hey, good evening.
Our Senior Executive Intern, Norman Chan.
Verbal cancer at the ready.
Don't make me use it.
And last but certainly not least, our producer Andy Bauman.
Hey guys, can we calm it down a bit? Gotta get through this podcast, okay?
See, he's your verbal radiation.
Yeah. Chemo.
So before we get into the news for this week, I just want to mention that I have finally picked the 12 finalists for America's Next Top PC Gamer Reviewer Competition.
Next up, the swimsuits.
I know. Well, we've already done talent, yes. So next, the swimsuits. In no particular order, they are – I'm going to just butcher all these names, so please bear with me. They are Brad Safransky, Daniel Shannon, Matthew Panzerino, Steve Rasmussen, Chris Churchill, Michael Mitchell, Chad Smith, who's also known around these parts as Captain Spaulding, James Parker, a.k.a. Squirrely Jimbo, Lauren Levine, John Hodgson, a mystery person who I don't actually know the name yet, but goes by DK, and Paul Montesanti. So congratulations to you all, and if you haven't heard from me yet, you will very soon for the next stage of the competition.
What a sausage party!
It's not going to be swimsuit. So, yeah, it won't be a sausage party. Unless Lauren wants to, participate.
Is Lauren the representing the tribe?
Have we confirmed that
Lauren is, in fact, a woman? Okay.
I have not actually confirmed that. So that's true. That's true. Lauren may not actually be of the female persuasion. I don't
How
know.
How would one confirm?
But we didn't have a lot of female contestants, and I was not looking at the names when I was actually reading their reviews. So
right.
It wasn't favoritism.
Oh, I believe you.
Oh, do you? Do you really?
What's the next step, Chuck? What do they have to do
for
the
finals?
Yeah,
what is the next step?
There is going to be a certain game. I have not announced it yet, but they're going to have to review in a 2-week period. And I'll be revealing that on our website very soon. And to them first. So first of all, in news, it's come to our attention, Wired has reported that the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency has just acquired 3 different PC-based video games that they're using to train their next wave of spies, which they like to call analysts. I like that word for it. And these aren't necessarily the most technically advanced games, and I love the names for them. The 3 games are called Rapid Onset, Vital Passage, and Sudden Thrust.
Whoa!
Yikes!
Wow. They're all vaguely suggestive, aren't they?
Yikes!
Third one, not so vaguely.
Hang on.
Hello.
Wow! I hope the
CIA's turning out a bunch of Mata Haris.
Well, if you actually look at the screens from the games, I mean, they look like
they are pretty hot.
Yeah. Well, they're not the newest games with the greatest technology or anything like that, but it looks serviceable for what they're trying to do.
I guess it's better, than if they were like, we've identified 3 retail games that we'll use to teach our,
Peggle.
Peggle. I was thinking Peggle. Yeah.
I did like this one bit. There's in the game Rapid Onset. So I guess you start off as an analyst. You're like a young, eager analyst. And you're climbing a mountain with your guru, and he suddenly pushes you off. And the only way that you can get him to save you is by reciting the 8 principles of intelligence analysis. I'm hoping that's not something that actually happens in the field.
That is kind of awesome.
Extremely concerned.
That is, you know what? I kind of hope it is. If there are going to be people who are spying for this country and protecting us, I want them to be the kind of guys who would expect their guru to push them off a mountain. They're just ready for anything.
At least you
don't have to pull out a gun and shoot your guru. That would have been worse.
That's bad form.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's another one in Sudden Thrust. The analyst finds himself in a crisis situation when terrorists sail a hijacked natural gas tanker into New York Harbor. Despite limited and inconclusive information, he and his colleagues must determine what the terrorists are up to and send the analysis to the Secretary of Defense. Ooh,
oh, I don't know. They've driven a big oil tanker into the harbor. What could they possibly be up to?
You can imagine James Bond.
It's not lowering gas prices. Oh, my God.
I'm here to analyze you, terrorists.
Tell me more about this oil tanker.
Please, sit a spell. Tell us more.
Yeah, don't screw with me. I pushed my guru off a mountain.
I would love to know what the point of the games are, though. I mean, is it supposed to make you think outside the box, or...
So the tool is for teaching recruits critical thinking skills. Mm-hmm. So basically, being able to make the right choices out there in the field, gives you, I guess, different scenarios and different responses to them. And if you pick the wrong one, then we're all getting blown up.
Oh, my God. Yeah. There's a screenshot of the guru pushing the guy off the mountain. It looks like the guy's doing the Nestea plunge. Check it out.
Yeah, because he's kind of falling backwards.
He's sort of
And the guru totally looks like he's like an extra from Kung Fu.
He does.
He looks like Pai Mei, with his 5-fingered.
Only the 8 principles of intelligence analysis can save him.
Damn it! I forgot number 7.
Wow.
Anyway, so moving right along. Speaking of other government agencies that are into games now, NASA had actually announced that it was wanting to create an MMO, and it was supposed to be an educational MMO that I think that they were going to be marketing, mainly towards high school students, obviously to get people interested in joining NASA sometime later on in their life. Well, now they've actually said that what they want to do was they used to have $3 million set aside for this project. Apparently, the $3 million is still there. They're just not going to give it to a developer. What they want to do is have a developer pitch them on doing the MMO and actually publish it and fund it themselves. And NASA is going to take part of, the $3 million is for their part of development, which I'm assuming is going to be for whatever consultation they give.
Right.
Parties? Pajama party.
I love the fact that they just did somebody forget to check the handbook before they put out the RFP for a they put out the RFP and then they're like, nah, we were just kidding. But the best part is the way they've spun it, that it's like, actually we're doing you a favor because there's actually a protocol that says that nobody can be paid twice for for something that they've done under this a NASA grant. I can't remember what it's called, I don't know, it's in here somewhere, but the non-reimbursable Space Act agreement. So
yeah,
actually,
I mean, we've all
heard of.
I have to agree because it does sound a little bit dickish. But the thing is, if you read NASA's fact on it, They actually say that, you know, what they expect is that this developer is going to be able to make the educational game for them, and then they're going to be able to take the NASA license and actually make a commercial product.
But they also say here NASA will consider negotiating brand placement. I mean, that consider negotiating. That's a, it's the most non-committal thing. I don't know if I'm supposed to be attracted by that.
I sort of get the idea that they were like, MMOs, those sound like the hot thing right now. Like, that's what we need. We need an MMO. Like, they just sort of didn't get the details on exactly
what's
involved.
They don't even say NASA will negotiate brand placement. NASA will consider negotiating brand placement. Like, because we will consider taking more money from you, you know, to place your brand.
Right. Like, would $3 million even be enough to develop a reasonably interesting MMO and then support it? It's not enough.
I think that's why they're going this route, because they probably figure that, okay, $3 million might be enough to kind of come up with an educational, you know, NASA simulator maybe, but it wouldn't be enough to actually be entertaining. So I think what they're counting on is that other people are going to pony up the dough to get the NASA license.
What a bunch of assholes.
I wish a good agency the best of luck in this endeavor. But
I think that they are probably making do with, you know, whatever budget that they can. I don't know. I mean, personally, I think it makes sense for them, because how much would a developer, a publisher, actually pay for a NASA license in the first place?
What would the NASA MMO be if you had the NASA license? What MMO would you make?
Well, so
going to Congress and see if you can get more cash.
Yeah, like woo.
Okay, so the
yes,
idea
lobby.
Of the game has to enhance STEM, which stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
Ooh, I think I'm going to move on to Rainbow Six Vegas too.
Fun.
Yeah, I just can't. I mean, I could maybe see a real smart developer coming up with a single player game that perhaps incorporated some of those concepts, but a NASA MMO, I don't get it. Like, hey, let's all go to the
Logan Decker plug moment. Did anyone else play the adventure games that had names like Physicus, Bioscope?
Oh, I remember you talking about those. No,
yeah, they were really, really good adventure games. I mean, they weren't, you know, you have to be into the whole point and click thing. But basically, all the puzzles were solved. You know, each one had a theme. Physicus was based on physics. Chemicus was based on chemistry. And they had another one based on natural sciences. But in order to complete the adventure, all the puzzles were themed with, you know, biology problems, real-life problems.
That sounds fun. Sorry.
Yeah, it really...
It really was a fun game. You had to find these manuals and look up, you know, chemical analysis stuff. And it really was. If you had an interest in biology, you know, natural sciences, they were very engrossing games. And, you know, I doubt it cost a fraction of $1 million even to produce.
What was the age appropriate? Like, were they age appropriate only for sort of
I would say that they were appropriate for anyone over 13. It was very much like Myst, you know, it was the whole slideshow thing, but still great games. I'm going to look up who made them, because it was really cool.
Well, you know, I don't care what you guys say. I can't wait to play as a level 22 mathematician trying to, you know, at a drawing board in NASA headquarters, trying to come up with a new propulsion system.
+5 Pythagorean theorem.
Oh, it was Viva Media. That's right. That's right. They do all of them. I think they still sell them. There you have it.
Teachers, run, don't walk.
Yeah. If you want some science in your classroom that maybe kids might play.
If you're lucky. If they're not throwing rocks at you behind your back.
I was just going to say.
Well, some really good news if you were planning on upgrading your system anytime soon. Intel has cut the price of its quad-core processors by, 50%?
Not all of them, just some of them. Do you want to list out which models they've...
Let's see. It looks like, okay, the Core 2 Quad Q6700 fell from $530 to $266.
Let's stop right there. Ladies and gentlemen, that's $266 for this ass-kicking quad-core processor.
Yeah, I think the best Intel quad-core processor before that was the one step down, the Q6600, which was priced around there too, like $250. But it's only a 2.4 gigahertz piece, and this one's 2.66.
So there were two at that price. Also, the Xeon X3230 also was cut from 530 to 266.
But that's not really a consumer chip.
Oh, okay, so you guys would recommend the Q6?
Yeah, 6700.
That is a mind-blowing bargain.
Those also aren't Penryns. The reason the price was cut is because Intel also launched their new quad-core Penryns. So the newer updated model is, I think, the Q9300. Which is similarly clocked and similarly priced, a little more expensive, but
it's about maybe 10% faster, or something like that.
Why the dramatic price drop then? That seems like a very dramatic price drop when the new products are not that much of a difference.
Well, what's happening? Norm just said they just introduced these new penguins, so they're on the market.
Well, I mean, processor jumps, can be sometimes very, incremental things. And plus, these are foundations upon which they can build even faster processors. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing that for how much speed you get for $266, that's mind-blowing. Also, the Core 2 Duo E6850, running at 3 gigahertz, is now at $183, which is also a fantastic bargain.
Which actually, I think we probably recommend that one over like a quad core, like the 3 gigahertz, dual core processors run games much faster than the slower clocked quad core ones, because nothing really uses quad core right now.
Well, I do a lot of video work, so I would go for the quad core, but again, that's for just exclusively gaming. You've got a better deal on the Core 2 Duo EA6850.
Well, say I was running something like a Core 2 Duo. Does this mean that I would have to upgrade my motherboard as well?
Right.
Depends what the socket is. They're all on the 775 socket, which I think most of the old Core 2 Duos are still running on.
Yeah, it depends how old your motherboard is, what processor you're running now. You can find all that on Intel's website if you go over there and look at their little chart thingies.
So how is AMD doing in comparison? Do they have anything like as powerful for the same price?
Yeah, they have a lot of powerful processors going on right now. They've sent us a bunch of their Phenoms that we're going to be taking a look at pretty soon. But Intel's got a hell of a head start. That it's really hard for AMD to get any attention these days. They've got their triple core processors out, which we're going to test this month and print in our August issue. And we'll be talking about them on our website as well. But right now, it's nothing really competitive with these price cuts.
That was my next question, is whether or not how do they compare price-wise? But
yeah.
I'd say, well, the best AMD chip, I think their Black Edition of their Phenom, I think, I want to say it's 9850. It's a revision of their last model, still Phenom. It's it's Black Edition, which means it's not locked. You can overclock it really easily, and that one only goes for $235. So the highest price Intel chip is like $1,000, and AMD just doesn't even have any products in that price range.
Well, also this week, Mark Rain, who's the vice president of Epic Games, clarified some of the company's positions on exactly what they think about PC gaming, because lately, I guess Tim Sweeney said something about how Unreal Engine 4 would be coming to consoles only. That's not exactly the case. So basically what he said was that one of the biggest misconceptions was when Tim Sweeney was talking about Unreal Engine 4, and he mentioned something along the lines of it being exclusively for the next generation of consoles. What he meant was it won't run on this generation of consoles, but people assumed what he meant was that it won't run on PCs. Hello, all game technology runs on PC. That's how you build it. Of course it'll be on PC. That should go without saying. He also mentioned that, basically, one of the reasons that so many people are kind of down on the, I guess, PC gaming as a platform is that they're not willing to go out and get the highest end cards and processors right now to get those really amazing experiences that you might actually experience on the consoles.
That really?
Yeah, well, I mean, he was talking about, we're just talking about the kinds of experiences that we want to make, the really high end, Hollywood quality cinematic experiences. So whenever we have a complaint or a concern, it's really related to that. We want to still be able to sell games like Unreal Tournament and Gears of War on the PC platform.
I'm flummoxed by this.
Yeah.
I am. I confess. I'm flummoxed by that notion because I think that speaks to like just such a small percentage of the people who have arguments about games, about PC versus console gaming, like games that are showing up on consoles that they expect to be on PCs. Like I don't get the impression that the thing that makes people upset is like, oh, I bought this game and it doesn't look as good on my PC.
Yeah.
And
no,
is
no,
that
no.
What he's saying?
Well, no, not exactly. I think what he's talking about is that he says that when Epic is talking about the PC gaming market, they're talking about a very narrow part of it, which are the people who have, you know, very high end PCs,
right?
High end, you know, gaming PCs, and that, you know, a lot of people who are playing PC gaming. I'm sorry, I'm just messing up what I'm saying right now, but a lot of people who are playing PC games, they're playing, you know, casual games, or they're playing World of Warcraft, you know, maybe games that don't necessarily require a top gaming PC.
Well, now that just kind of sticks in my craw. I gotta say, particularly coming from Mark, whose company, by the way, is part of the PC Gaming Alliance, which is supposedly, you know, part of their goal is to, in fact, make it easier for people to get into PC gaming.
Yeah.
You know,
where
why
have they
would
been
you...
lately?
What part of this do you actually disagree with? Because it all sounds pretty right on to me.
Well, I disagree with the notion that when they're talking about PC gaming, like the PC gamers that Epic Games are focusing on are just that high-end, you know, group of people who have the top-of-the-line hardware. Why would you do that?
Well, but what he's saying is that we don't want to make a substandard game. You know, they don't want to make a game that is not as graphically good as what they think that they're capable of doing.
Well, don't make a substandard game, but
I agree. There's something in the tone that I find off-putting, and it goes. And the funny thing is that, you know, these are a lot of the same people that are grumbling so much about piracy, and Stardock's answer was, hey, you know what, you guys, you need to open up your audience. You need to appeal to more people, you know, not less.
Yeah, I just don't. I don't at all buy the notion that you can only make the best possible game that you can make if you're making it for people with the highest end machines. Like the, you know, graphics are not the only thing that make a PC game good. And in fact, I would challenge. I mean, especially coming from somebody at Epic who traditionally make really good games. They look really good, but the gameplay, which really isn't that the reason you play a game in the first place, is solid and good. Like, why would you say, like, our number one concern is making games that look the best they can for people who, this small portion of people who only have the best possible hardware? Makes no sense to me. Like, you can't say that and then turn around at the same time and be like, PC gaming is dying. We don't really understand. We're all scratching our heads.
But they're not saying that PC gaming is dying. I mean, it's the same reason why, you know, they would bring their games to the PS3 and Xbox 360, but they're not going to bring their games to the Wii. You know, they would have to scale it down for the Wii, and I'm not comparing the PC to the Wii, obviously, but what they're trying to say, though, is that, you know, if they're going to make games for the PC, they want it to look as good as possible. They really want to take advantage of the newest hardware that's out.
So they have no faith in scaling. They have no faith in
their
game without it looking perfect.
Yeah, that.
I'm not saying that I completely agree, like, shoot for the stars. Great. Make the absolutely best-looking, you know, game that you can. Make a game that pushes the hardware. But if you're only making, you know, a game for those people who have the top-of-the-line stuff, of course your audience is going to be smaller.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's good for any of us.
Not just smaller, minuscule.
Dag burn it.
Well, he does go on to say, because I don't want to misrepresent him here. He says,
my phone's going to ring any second now.
Well, Chuck totally misquoted me. He put this completely out of context.
I should add that we really like Mark Rain and we like what Epic does. Like,
you're fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay, so the final part of this quote is, you're able to buy a PC that's as powerful as the Xbox 360 long before the 360 generation is finished. So people calm down. If we give conflicting views and say things that are negative, it's because we care about it and we want it to be strong, and we're going to work to make it strong. Relax, take a breath, PC gaming will be fine.
Don't start kissing up now.
We're already mad at you.
Don't get mad at me. I'm just a messenger.
Just forget it.
No,
you know what? I appreciate what he's saying, and I particularly appreciate that that's the tone that he wants to that they want to take. And I obviously, like, no matter even when Tim or Mark or even Cliffy B have said sort of things that have made those of us in the PC gaming community feel rubbed the wrong way, they've always in person and in when they're quoted, when they're doing public speaking, they've always said, like, Epic cut its teeth on PC gaming. Like, if it were not for the PC, that company would be a very different sort of company right now. So I certainly appreciate the fact, like, they don't want to abandon PC gaming. But
I do hope they keep in mind... Oh, I'm sorry, Chuck. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, part of his point is that, they're developing on PCs.
Right.
they're not going to completely abandon it. I mean, there are business concerns that they may have about, how many people are actually going to be able to buy their products on the PC. But, personally, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I like companies that really push the PC. They push what it can do. It's what will, make the... PC gaming, go forward. It'll make people want to upgrade their machines.
Yeah, you and I sort of, we cross, we have like a, what is that called when you have two overlapping circles? Is that a Venn diagram? Is that what a Venn?
Oh. Yeah.
Is that a Venn diagram? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we have like the Chuck Kristen Venn diagram on, opinion on this has some crossover, but I, as I've said before on this podcast, I actually kind of disagree with that. Like, I want companies to push PC gaming. I want them to push people to upgrade their machines. I want them to push the limits of what you can do and see in a PC game. But I have deep concerns about the fact that the developers are focusing on that instead of on making PC gaming more accessible to more people and helping more people understand. In fact, that like they already have a PC or a gaming platform in their homes. If they would just sort of, if we could educate them about what they need to make their PCs into, into gaming machines.
Well, and the thing is, I'm sorry.
One other thing I was just going to say, like you can end up making yourself so exclusive that you exclusive yourself right out of being a viable market. So.
Well, I'm not saying that every developer should do this. I'm just saying that, we're going to have the Will Wrights, the Blizzards. They're going to be making this very accessible entertainment that lots and lots of people are going to buy, and it's only going to be on PC. But I do like that there is a developer out there, a handful of developers, who are saying, we really, really want to push the hardware. We want to make this grow. We want for you to have those moments where, you see the next trailer for a PC game and you go, oh my God, I could never have this on an Xbox 360 or a PS3.
Right. On the other hand, it's like I don't remember anybody, telling me personally, like, I enjoyed playing Crysis so much more because it looked, because playing it at high versus medium settings,
right. I did.
Right.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. I think it's a minimal impact on gameplay overall.
I will say that, especially with Crysis, that, playing it high res with everything turned on is just such an amazing experience.
It is an amazing experience, but I don't think it didn't change the game for me. I'm still immersed if the AI is realistic, And I mean, I love playing MechWarrior 2, and you look at it today, and it's like, oh, geez, I can't believe I enjoyed that. But I was completely immersed in that game when I first played it because the gameplay was so good, the balance was so good, the missions were so good.
And that's where in this case, it sort of depends on the game. Without getting too much into it, because we're still under NDA, like, there's a game that I've been playing lately that when you can't use, when you can't dial the textures up and dial the graphics up, it absolutely affects the gameplay. Like, it's not a fun game to play. Mm-hmm. But I think there are other situations where it doesn't matter as much. What really matters is just, like, the mechanics of playing the game, so... Mm-hmm.
No,
let's hug it out.
definitely, you should have the options. There should be some scalability in there.
Yeah.
It's just, for those people who did buy Crysis right out of the box, and they couldn't necessarily run it, on the highest settings, and they were disappointed because of that. It's like, well, okay, that's a good reason to upgrade, or definitely a good reason to think about upgrading in the future. And just as Origin got me to upgrade my old, God, what did I have, like a 486 SX25, you know, back in the day, they got me to upgrade with BioForge just so I could run it. You know, I like that, you know, there are companies out there that are getting us to do that same thing now. Anyway.
That's true. I upgraded to play MechWarrior 2. So.
Hey, Chuck, let's hug.
Oh, I feel so good, Kristen.
Hug it out.
You're so soft and bumpy. So
sudden thrust.
Ew.
No. Yeah, why'd you have to go there?
It was just the name of the
fail.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, on to something.
Metastasizing the cancer.
on to something else that's a little bit disgusting. Uwe Boll. So Uwe acknowledged in a recent interview with MTV that Blizzard put the smackdown on him because so there are plans in the works, and I don't know how far along they are with him right now, for a Warcraft movie. And so he apparently contacted Blizzard to see if he could do the development for it, because he, of course, you know, is the number one video gaming auteur. And he says, "I got in contact with Paul Sams of Blizzard, and he said, we will not sell the movie rights, not to you, especially not to you."
Well.
"Because it's such a big online game success, maybe a bad movie would destroy that ongoing income, what the company has with it." So, Uwe Boll will not be touching Warcraft or a World of Warcraft movie anytime. Ever. So, bravo to Blizzard for sticking to their guns. Well, I don't think it was actually a close one, because I think Blizzard is large enough of a company where they would never actually turn over the reins to, you know, what would essentially be a small potatoes outfit like Uwe Boll.
But that movie is in development right now.
A total crackpot.
I mean, they have big plans for that movie, right? They announced it last year at BlizzCon, and we haven't heard about anything.
Well, I looked it up on IMDb, and there is a listing for it. There's a writer, but that's about it. And it says it's supposed to be coming out in 2009, but I sincerely doubt it if they haven't, you know, seriously started on it yet. Okay, and now, finally, for my favorite news story of the week.
This is like crazy corner now.
Oh, yeah. It's Jack Thompson time. You know, I know we've said in the past that we're going to try to control talking about Jack Thompson, because we talk about him too much. He's just a dippy guy. We shouldn't actually give him any coverage, but he keeps doing something amazing each and every week, and that's why I am not going to sign that petition to you know, get rid of him or anything like that. I think I might send him money just to keep him around. So this week he has actually sent an open letter to the mother of the chairman of Take-Two Interactive, Strauss Zelnick. And I love this. He actually starts off the letter. It's addressed to Mrs. Zelnick, Take-Two chairman's mother.
Like, I hope that's what he put on the envelope. New York,
regarding
New York.
Regarding your son, Strauss Zelnick. And, of course, this is about the upcoming release of Grand Theft Auto 4. "Dear Mrs. Zelnick, your son, as you may know, or maybe you don't know, is a chairman of Take-Two Interactive Software." Like, you know, maybe he kept it.
Oh, my God!
Oh, my goodness!
he's what? He's chairman of Take-Two?
What? He told me he was...
Don't they create...
Next Thanksgiving is going to be very uncomfortable.
Why did I give him all that money for medical school?
So he says later in the letter, "I would encourage you either to play this game," talking about GTA 4, "or have an adroit video gamer play it for you. Some of the latter gamers are on death row, so try to find one out in the civilian population who hasn't killed someone yet."
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, I know. It's like you pretty much play one of the Grand Theft Auto games, and you have to go out and commit murder.
That leaves us out.
Yeah. We're actually doing this.
But it keeps lawyers in business, like Jack Thompson.
I would have to say that he's one of a kind, really. I don't think anybody else is doing this.
I would have become a lawyer if I'd known you could get away with all this crap.
He's having a great time.
Later on in the letter, because you know you think that would be it, he actually says, let's see, your son Strauss has recently assured the world that he is a Boy Scout. Everybody knows that. I'd love to see the merit badges that Scout Troop handed out. Is there a Ted Bundy merit badge?
Oh, so, he did not.
Oh, yeah. He compared the chairman of Take-Two Interactive to a serial killer.
A Ted Bundy merit badge.
Yes.
That, you know what? That's almost clever.
No.
If it wasn't so crazy.
He gets very creative writing these missives, really.
Did he put gay porn in this one?
That's why I love him so much. Oh, yes, of course. Well, not game porn, but he does say the pornography and violence that your son traffics in is the kind of stuff that most mothers would be ashamed to see their son putting into the hands of other mothers' children. Thank you, Jack. Thank you again for providing us with this news story. I can't wait to see what you do next week.
I think I figured out Jack Thompson. I think that
you
this
did?
Is the most genius viral marketing plan Take-Two has ever done.
Oh,
you're right. Wouldn't that be amazing if we found out later on that he's actually on Take-Two's payroll?
He totally
that
has
would be awesome!
Oh my god, that would be epic.
I think you cracked the code.
Dude, I want GTA 4 either way.
Now moving right along, it is time for Masterpiece Theater. First of all, e-props go out to Mikey77, who was the very first person to correctly guess that Anachronox was the game we reenacted last week. Much love for Mikey77. Woo! You guys are awesome.
Yeah!
Oh,
woo!
Thank you!
Boy. Alright, so this is how it's going to work. We're going to reenact a scene from a PC game, and you have to guess which game it's from. The first person to name the correct game on this episode's podcast comments at www.pcgamerpodcast.com, well, we're going to give you serious props on our next podcast. So now, without further ado, this week's episode of Masterpiece Theater.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yeehaw!
Shit, what was that?
Command, I got a problem here. Some cowboy clipped me on the way in, and prosecutor is 50% of dropping.
Copy, Marine. Your stats are nominal, but proceed to designate target LZ. We'll see what we can... Holy shit! What the hell is going on? We just lost a third of the platoon. Just as they cleared Sector 9 and X-Ray, we got to pick up an AA discharge?
Negative, Command. I'm approaching 9 or X-Ray right now, and there's no heat coming from the planet.
They're coming up here from all angles.
From across the board 10 seconds ago.
Damn it! Got a little freaky up here from down there. Hey, Clip, just save your ass, Marine. I just lost all reading from the rest of the platoon. Try and get to primary LZ and rendezvous with any other squad leaders you can find.
Shit! Just overshot LZ, Command. Command, do you copy? Christ, this thing is a brick. I have no flight control. Repeat, I have no flight control! I'm south of LZ, reaching the southern structure, prepping for crash landing! Command! Repeat, no flight control! Ah!
Bravo. Okay, for all you listeners who were fast-forwarding through that to get to the other part, you can stop fast-forwarding now. We're done.
Hi, we're back.
Okay, if you can name that game, hurry to our podcast comments and submit your guess. I'd like to thank listener Nitro Quick for sending in this script. If you'd like for us to continue doing Masterpiece Theater, we still need your help. If you have a favorite scene from a PC game, please send us a transcript of the scene to editor@pcgamer.com. We just might act it out on the show. All right, and now let's take a few questions.
Hello, everybody at PC Gamer Podcast, and greetings. This is Andre from Serbia. I was just wondering how you feel about that whole new thing in first-person shooter games, where you can't really die but get respawned, like for example in Bioshock. Because first I thought, cool, because it basically just saved me the time of having to reload. but then I actually played through BioShock and found that it sort of killed a lot of the suspense and horror for me. I remember playing System Shock 2 and literally shivering in broad daylight with other people in the room, which, you know, just wasn't the case with BioShock. And second question, I would really like to know what are your favorite games in, say, past 5 years. Thanks for listening. Love the podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I like that.
Bye-bye.
Norm, what do you think?
About the save game system?
Yeah.
You know, they kind of fixed that. There was an option to turn it off after a new patch. I don't have a problem with it.
You're talking about BioShock, right?
Yeah, in BioShock, exactly. I mean, a lot of games right now, BioShock, you actually use the health system, and a lot of shooters right now, you know, have used the Halo regen system, where you just stay behind cover, you know, run away from fire, and your health regens. I think the BioShock Vita Chamber systems, you know, it's preferable to like a checkpoint save system, so I'd prefer that over, you know, not being able to save anytime I want. It doesn't ruin the suspense for me, because there's still some really freaky moments, so I'm fine with it.
What really ruins suspense for me is having to replay a huge part of a level again just to get back where I was. That really kills it for me in a game.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit that, you know, I'm one of those guys who would actually, like, you know, move a little bit, kill some people, save, you know, repeat over and over again. And so, you know, having the Vita Chambers do that, you know, just meant that I knew that if I forgot to save, that I wouldn't be that far away from where I left off. So it didn't really kill it for me at all.
You know what I thought was fantastic was the system in Prey, where it dropped you into that sort of ethereal mode, and you had to shoot the red and blue birds. And basically, you had to re-earn some of your health and your spirit power. So,
I mean,
you know,
it's the same
kind of
thing where you could never die.
Yeah.
I really like, you're right, the mini game idea is really good. But what I didn't like is that it wasn't dynamic. Like, you know, if you shot more birds, you get more health or something. Yeah. It wasn't like that. It was just the same mini game over and over again.
No. You had to. If the more birds you shot, the more health you had when you were resurrected.
Was that actually?
Yeah,
the case?
Yeah. That's why that was
right
so
then.
Cool.
Okay.
It not only did you had to, you know, you actually did die, but then you had to, you know, gather up as much more health as you can, because you probably died in a really hectic situation and you were going to be dropped right back into it. And so it kept the tension going, it kept the action going. You didn't feel like you were, you know, having to repeat anything. It was a really, really terrific system.
And let's see, favorite games of the last 5 years. I guess I would have to say Crysis would be one of them. Half-Life 2. Peggle, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Peggle.
What about you guys?
I agree with you on Crysis. Absolutely stunning game. The entire Half-Life 2 series. Portal was a game that... I know it just sounds like it's hype, you know, because it came out so recently, but it is exactly the kind of game I've been waiting for a long time. It's full of surprises, but with just packed full of basic, fundamental, fun action. But, you know, my favorite video games have tended to be adventures throughout the years. You know, those are the ones that really stuck with me, like Grim Fandango game.
Just last 5 years.
Yeah, but, you know, that's the kind of thing, something like that really sticks with me for a long time. So I would say Psychonauts is in there.
Definitely.
Terrific story, you know.
Actually, you know, well, for me, in that case, the Sam and Max series I thought was excellent. I would also say, I'm not sure, this might be on the edge of 5 years, but the Freedom Force games as well. Mm-hmm. Norm, what about you?
I'd have to say Portal, TF2, Battlefield 2, Battlefield 1942, and Rise of Nations.
Yeah, that's good. The Battlefield series definitely standouts of the last 5 years. Although, if you're going to go back and play them now, it'd probably be hard to find good games still going on.
Yeah.
Max Payne is over 5 years, isn't it?
I was going to say Max Payne, but I think it is over 5 years.
Because remember the first time you played that? And
oh, my
like,
God.
Bullet time.
That's still probably one of my favorite games of all time.
I mean, they went on for 15 hours, and it never got old. More bullet time, yeah!
Actually, I like that in Max Payne 2 as well.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, I just remember the first time, like, it was just like, oh! I actually thought Max Payne 2 was a better game, even.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Well, I just liked that so much more, and the environment was actually destructible, you know? Mm-hmm. So it actually, you know, kind of for me, it was like a precursor to Stranglehold, because it really did feel a lot more like a John Woo film to me.
Yeah. You know what? I would love to see it come back, because it obviously predates 5 years, way before. But I wish they would do another No One Lives Forever.
Oh,
that was a terrific game, you know, and the second one was even funnier.
The worst thing is that series left off on a really down note. They had that like semi-expansion pack where you played as the guy.
Contract Jack.
Yeah. It's terrible.
Sucked. Oh.
So what would you, like, if there was one word to say about that, how would you describe it?
Oh, bad.
Oh, okay. All right.
Oh.
Cock.
Okay, next question.
This is Knighthood from the UK. I'm sure you've heard of Trackmania Nations Forever, which gives you a free full game, but is effectively a demo for Trackmania United. I was just wondering, do you think this would be more effective at making you want to buy a game than just having one or two levels of it? It kind of works both ways. It makes the players want a taste of more, but maybe also makes them think it's worthless buying the full game if they've already can play most of it. So, great podcast, and love to hear from you.
Well, I mean, it's basically the shareware model.
Yeah.
That's what we had back in the early 90s, you know, when you could play most of Doom and Doom 2. And I do kind of actually have to admit that I think that might have been the reason why I didn't buy Doom in the very beginning, was that there was so much there that I could actually play.
Yeah. Although I did buy the rest of Commander Keen after playing. I mean, it was a full game in itself, the part that was free. And yeah, but I was so hooked on it, and I was so tired of waiting for, you know, something else, that I ended up buying the rest of the series. And you know, another thing back then, it was not that much money, you know, right. So it didn't feel like a big risk.
I think with the Trackmania series, though, is that it's a good bet, because you realize that, you know, if you get this much in the smaller game, you know, the shareware version, that you're going to get a whole lot more in the larger game. So I think for them it may be a better business proposition.
It wouldn't be weird if the shareware was like 95% of the game, and you pay just to get the ending.
Just
that's effective.
They hold
right
out
there.
That ending for you.
I was trying to think back to like playing Commander Keen and wondering whether or not I would buy it as a share, and I was like, wait, I was way too young to be making monetary decisions. Like, I had nothing crossed my mind, you know, like, that's weird that I never really had the full shareware experience, because I could never make a decision about it.
You know what? Maybe they should make you have to pay if you want to save your game.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, cold.
That's true. I guess we're now like reaching a point where there's a generational gap, where there are people who don't remember the days of shareware.
Yeah, like I remember it, but not in the way that it would affect my purchasing decisions. You know,
because
what I mean?
Because the screen was blocked by your mom's tit.
Oh,
shareware.
Okay, I wasn't that young.
It's too susceptible to piracy these days.
Yeah.
That's why.
Although, you know, I mean, it's I think a lot of people, just for the convenience, I'm not sure that it would affect sales all that much as people think it does. You know, if people enjoy something and they know they can pay a reasonable amount of money to the company and just download the next chapter, I don't think people who would do that would necessarily pirate the game and they'd lose a sale. I just instinctively don't think I'd buy that. But,
well, you know, and that may be a way for episodic gaming to go. Like, you know, you get the first episode free, and
absolutely,
then if you like that one, then, you know, you'll be willing to pay for the rest of the episode.
Oh, hell yeah. That would be a great way for Alone in the Dark to pull in a whole new audience, you know, because it's been such a long time, you
right.
know, since the games that, hey, you know what, here's the new system, here's the new gameplay, here's the new story, look what we can do. You know, and we'll keep shoveling.
Although, actually, Alone in the Dark would be a bad example, because they are going to be releasing it as a bundle of episodes at retail. But maybe for Grimm.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Although Grimm is being released through GameTap, so, you know, maybe not. But okay, if there was a different example, maybe season 3 of Sam and Max. But, you know, they pretty much did that with episode 4 from season 1.
Yeah. That's right.
Where they gave away that episode, and then, you know. Hopefully, because that was the best episode from season 1, that would have gotten people interested in buying season 2.
And a great idea. Again, it does the same thing. Hey, you know, if you remember Sam and Max, look at what's going on today, you know? And people could say, oh, yeah, it's just as funny, you know? It's even cooler looking. There's more to do. And you get attached to the characters again.
But it's not representative of the gameplay, the old version and new version.
But I mean the way they released the new version for free, one episode, yeah.
So I think maybe time for one more question.
Sure.
Good questions, by the way.
Hey, guys, this is Greg from Colorado. I'm going to be looking to get a new machine soon with my economic stimulus check, and I'm trying to figure out what operating system to put on the machine. I've been reading a number of articles recently about how with XP, pretty much everything runs faster and how the frame rates on games are going to be a lot better. But then on the other hand, Windows Vista has got DirectX 10, and so there's obviously a trade-off there. Given all these things, what do you think is a better option for the OS to put on a new machine? Thanks. Bye.
Logan, I'll let you take
Logan?
This one.
Logan. Okay, well, so $600, burning a hole in your pocket, what do you get? Mm-hmm.
Get it out right. Here.
Okay, well, there's mitigating circumstances here. Stimulus checks come out in July, right? Will they still be selling XP on machines at that time? Microsoft claimed that they were going to stop, you know, selling licenses, which would mean, you know, it's not like they would take boxes off the shelves, but they were just going to stop distributing it. Now they're rethinking it because, just like this guy, a lot of people are saying, I don't know that I want to go Vista. Now, as everyone who reads PC Gamer knows, we pushed Vista pretty hard. Back when it was launched, we really backed up behind it. We loved the story that Microsoft had about pushing games for Windows as a platform. However, since then, we've been pretty disappointed at the follow-up. Even with SP1, frame rates continue to lag behind XP, which is a really disappointing thing when you spend as much money as you do for Vista. And you do spend a lot of money, even with the recent price cuts. I would have to put it like this at this point. This is, sorry, Microsoft, but I'm saying unless you really, really, really want DirectX 10 and you've seen Crysis doing everything it can do and you've seen the water effects in BioShock and you think, wow, I can't live without that, I might stick with XP for now, especially with SP3 just on the verge of coming out. Service Pack 3 for XP should be released within, what do you think, Norm, like a week or so? Very, very soon, let's put it that way. And I think, you can expect a frame rate bump there as well. Vista, you can always upgrade later if you want. It's not that difficult. We did a how-to on it, you know, not too long ago. You always have time to upgrade. Downgrading is another story altogether. So you know what? If unless you're going to buy a completely built machine, which I doubt for $600, you know, if you're just upgrading, I might say stick with XP for now because I don't see that much value in Vista anymore, and I don't see them building on the foundation of what they launched over a year ago.
Part of me keeps expecting that SP3 is just going to break Windows XP. That, you know, you know, it's just like all of a sudden games just creep down, you know, frame rates get affected.
How about that?
Yeah. Oh. Well, maybe, you know, maybe what a good idea would be for you to upgrade to Vista. You know,
yeah.
I bet it would cure that.
They should give out XP as a shareware to get you to buy Vista.
There it is.
And people would still uninstall it?
We did push it really, really hard. We thought this was they were going to throw their weight behind it, but it doesn't seem like they have, you know. It hasn't become, the must-have OS for gaming.
Well, I use Vista at home. I like Vista. I have had no problems running it. I have a very good machine. My fault with Microsoft is not just with Vista and the frame rate issue, but just how they've completely fallen on the whole Games for Windows initiative. And I know we've brought this up before, but man, you know, Microsoft just needs to be taken to task for how they've completely fallen apart on that. And it was supposed to be, you know, kind of a partnership between Vista and Games for Windows and, you know, how this was going to be a new era for PC gaming, and they've just completely let us down.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I don't think you'll find many people here with you know, a strong feeling of fealty to Vista or anything like that. Just you know, and we should be taken to task for the big push behind Vista. You know, I wish we'd been a little more forward thinking, but you know, all we can say now is, well, think once, think twice, because buying two operating systems is not very nice.
That was good.
Thank you.
And with that being said, let's move on to playlist. Logs, what have you been playing?
It's Rainbow Six Vegas 2 every day, all day. I love it. It's especially since I just recently finished the first one. I'm so happy to be continuing my adventure in Vegas. But I also picked up Overclocked, which is a new adventure game that seemed kind of interesting to me. It has a nice psychological angle. So I've been really, really looking hard for a decent adventure game to come my way.
There have been a lot of those sort of, you know, psychological adventure games coming out recently. It seems like not a month goes by where I don't get one or two on my desk.
I just
psychological.
Want to see,
I'm back, by the way. Sorry.
I just want to see one, you know, a ball get knocked out of the park, you know.
Right, exactly. One that really hits out of the park. And the problem is that they always go into it with very good intentions. They're usually made on a very, you know, small, limited budget overseas. And then when it gets over here, either cultural differences, localization, or just not being very good, it just kind of falls apart. You know?
Experiment had me for 2-3 hours. I was like, oh, this is, wow, this, what a great idea. Because, you know, your character is just controlling cameras and monitoring things for another character, and you're trying to help her through the ship. It was a great premise, and then it just
didn't quite get there.
They, you know, it became repetitive and but you know, it was an adventurous thing. It was risk taking and I admire that. I'm glad I played it. But I want to see an adventure game knock it out of the park again. Hasn't happened. I'll get back to you when it does.
Okay. Kristen, what are you playing?
I've been playing the Age of Conan beta.
Yeah.
Yes, which you can read all
Bye,
about.
Crom.
Yes, by Grom. What is that I hear? The lamentations of their women?
I lament.
Why, there's one now.
So I've been playing the Age of Conan beta, which you can read all about Chuck's and my experience in that in our next cover story. And then I played, speaking of psychological adventure game thrillers, I played Penumbra Black Plague for review this month, which I think I had mentioned previously on the podcast, probably about this game and its predecessor, which I also reviewed, that it's got that crazy physics engine, you know, that lets you, you know, if you want to
grab things.
Right.
And lift them up. It's a little bit like Trespasser in a way, right?
I didn't play Trespasser.
Oh, okay.
So I don't
know. But you kind of have like that hand and you can pick
That's
up
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Hey, Kristen, did that make you want to barf? I played it briefly.
Were you not here when I was talking about this the other day?
I must not have been.
I don't want to completely blow my review, which this doesn't necessarily speak to, but it took me 4 starts to start playing the game. Because the first 3 times I started, I got like 10 minutes in, and I had to put my head between my knees. And then the last time,
play the game.
I'm not exaggerating. I was actually like curled into a ball on the bathroom floor.
What?
Like, I was so sick. I was actually like, I had broken out in a cold sweat, and I was just waiting to yak.
Daddy,
like, it was just
has mommy
awful.
Been drinking again?
Yeah.
So were you lamenting?
I was lamenting, all right. I think I might have even been going like, like I was really sick. So I finally figured out that I needed to like, you know, change the mouse sensitivity and sit further back from the monitor. The problem is, as anybody knows who's had that happen to them, because it does actually happen to me sometimes when I'm playing first person shooters. Once you're like over the, you know, you've gone like a bridge too far, like you're actually sick, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah,
you just have to go lay down for a while. Yeah, and it takes a while to get like not sick anymore. So I had to basically go away from the game for like a day. And then it turns into like a hours for it to go away. It does, and it turns into like a psychological thing. Like when I went back to it and was like, okay, I know what I need to do. I had to like psych myself up to like not remember how sick I had been while I changed the mass sensitivity.
I just want to make a caveat, you know, that just to everyone out there who this doesn't happen to, it's nothing specific about this game. This just it either happens to you or it doesn't. On some games it does, on some games it doesn't. There seems to be no common thing to it. You can never know when it's going to happen.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And it's
so,
you know,
so it's
like,
not specific to this one game, although it is a little more swervy, but still.
But even like the first time I played Half-Life, I had to play it in like 20-minute increments with like some ginger at my side. Like I'd play for a while and then I'd have to go lay down.
And like I just ginger does help.
My guess is that the publisher is not going to put this on the box.
Right, exactly.
Made me curl up on the
bathroom
floor.
Curl up, made Kristen barf. Right. yeah, but in fairness, once I made the adjustments. That's exactly what I did. I actually moved my chair back from the monitor, and that made all the difference. Difference in the world. There are certain places like box puzzles. I still was just like, oh my god, I'm gonna die. Like,
so would you say that, you know, if you got sick while watching Cloverfield, that maybe this game isn't for you?
Oh, it's definitely not for you. If you're the kind of person, if you get car sick, if you have to ride in the front seat on long car trips, this is not the game for you.
I don't know. I had no problem watching movies like Cloverfield or Diary of the Dead, but
I was just going to say, I'm not familiar with Diarrhea of the Dead.
That was an outtake. That was a deleted scene.
George Romero is really running out of titles now.
Oh, no.
You can see all the fingers running down into the over the floor.
Oh, yikes.
But, you know, it still happens to me in games, so that is weird. You would think, you know, I would get sick at those, but not at the others. But it's weird. It's like I had a horrible time playing Quake 4, but not Unreal 3. You know why? I have no problem with Half-Life 2, but it happened a little in BioShock. Makes no sense. So
I was fine in BioShock, but what was I? The Quake games actually made me kind of sick too.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because in Unreal, you know, you tend to bob more while you're
right.
Moving.
Exactly. You would think that would do
no
it, right?
Sense. None of this makes any sense.
Speaking of someone who has never gotten sick while playing a game, I don't understand it personally, but
yeah. Understand it either. There's no rhyme or reason to it. The bobbing,
and it's only in first person perspective. If I play in third person perspective, I have absolutely no problem ever.
And that's probably one of the reasons why I love third person games, because I never have to worry. Like, am I
never
gonna
get sick.
and Logan, you say that Ginger usually cures it.
Like Kristen said, once it happens, you're screwed. I mean,
you're
going to
wait it out.
Ginger helps a little. But if you do ginger right when you think, starting to feel a little funky, it does help.
And how do you do ginger?
I literally chew it. Like, I take a hunk off. It's nice if you can peel it first, because otherwise it's
pretty. I'm not quite that hardcore. I'll actually go and get some candy ginger from Trader Joe's, but...
I take a hunk off and I keep it in.
Apparently, Thor over there will just like to yank his right out of the ground and.
Well, he does like to graze, so.
But you know what? It's funny because I'm working on this little thing that I want to write about it on the web, where the pregnancy is one of the magazines we have here at Future. And they often review things for nausea remedies for pregnant women. And so they've been sharing with me some of the stuff that they get in, like inhalers and stuff like that. They're supposed to cure nausea. And I've been trying them, and there are some surprises there. So I'll be writing about that soon.
Well, most surprising is that you're now pregnant.
Yes. Understood.
You've heard it here first.
Man, my
there
back
are two
is
pregnant men
me.
In America.
Oh, boy.
So, Norm, what are you playing?
Just more TF2, Rainbow Six Vegas 2. I mean, I really like Logan said, that I get to finish the story, because a lot of that story is just left dangling in the first game. But, you know, beat the game, back to TF2 now. Hoping to try more Sins since the new patch came out a week and a half ago, but haven't had a chance yet.
Andy, how about you?
I've just been playing Rainbow Six Vegas 2 as well. I love it. I love how you can dress up your character now. Like, you can choose all the camo.
That was a great laugh.
So your character is a cross-dresser?
No, like you can choose a female character, though. Yeah, it's freaking awesome.
Well, it is a rainbow.
I was thinking about
Kitty tattoo.
I was talking to
him now on the catwalk in Las Vegas.
Someone about playing Rainbow Six Vegas 2, like around non-gamers, and like you sound like a crazy person. Rainbow Six Vegas 2. Like, no one knows what you're talking about.
It's a football score. That's
It is kind of funny how it's become a franchise all its own. You know, it's kind of like it's part of Rainbow Six, but no, it's Rainbow Six Vegas.
Yeah,
I would love it if saucier. Have you ever seen somebody on a motorcycle wearing one of those helmets that puts ears on their motorcycle helmet? It's a giant fuzzy cover for your motorcycle helmet.
Oh, I love I know
see
what
people
you're talking
riding
about.
Around. So you see somebody with a huge panda head on
exactly.
A motorcycle, and I would love
they
to put
one,
that on.
They make one with devil horns.
I know.
Too.
I want because you can change the camo color. It's so awesome. It's like playing dress up, and then you get to go kill some terrorists.
Aww. Yeah.
And they're like, "Who is that panda?"
That's precious. Right. Look, a fuzzy bear.
Oh, you know what though? How they made those guns locked? Because my favorite gun in the first one was like the M8 or whatever, and it's unlocked. It's you have to unlock it now. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
So that's not good then.
That's no good. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it seems like they should make it so that you know, like if the game detects that you had that game in the previous. You know, version that it would automatically unlock it for you.
I would love that.
It's actually not a bad idea, yeah.
But you are playing as a different character, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. Not the same hero.
Yeah. So I guess that makes sense. Maybe. Well, for myself, I've been playing... I've also been playing Age of Conan, the beta, which, again, I'm sorry, we just can't talk about yet, but it will be in our July cover story.
Our time will come.
Our time will come, and then we will spill the beans! Also, for review, I have been playing Obscure the Aftermath, which is the sequel to the 2005 survival horror game Obscure.
They had 3 years to change the name.
I know.
Yeah.
It's like, I gave them a hard time. In my original review for Obscure, I gave them a hard time for the name. It's like,
it's
why
just
would
such
you
a
choose,
setup. Yeah.
Yeah, why would you choose a name that you know is going to be going right to a bargain bin? You know, it's like...
Right. Like why don't you just call it ass?
It's like... Yes, it's like, you know, the sales clerk is taking it from the box up to the shelf, and on the way, like, it just gets sucked into the bargain bin.
And it's sequel ass too.
Yeah, it's like the aftermath. Okay, it kind of reminded me of I don't know if anyone remembers the and this is going to go over the head of like probably half of our listeners, but there was a spinoff to MASH, and they actually called it Aftermath.
Yes.
No.
Yes. There were three characters: Colonel Potter. The priest and Klinger, they pretty much were the stars
Aftermath.
Of this new series.
Oh yeah. Lord.
So anyway, if you want to read the review, it's going to be in our July issue. Long story short, I didn't quite like it as much as the first one, unfortunately. So
assier, I'm sorry, than ass.
it was a little obscurier. Than the first one. Perhaps.
Even more obscure.
Not in a good way. It's going to the bargain bin twice as fast.
Wow.
All right, well, thanks to everyone for joining us today. If you'd like to subscribe to PC Gamer Magazine, and you definitely should, head on over to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe and send us some money. Hey, sure, why not? And if you'd like to submit a question to the podcast, you can call 1-877-404-1337, extension 724, leave a voice message, or submit an MP3. Oh, I'm sorry. Or if you want to submit an MP3, email it to pcgamerpodcast@gmail.com. On behalf of Kristen, Logan, Norm, Andy, and myself, thank you for listening, and see you next week.
Ciao,
bello. Very comforting voice.
Definitely.
It's like a blanket.
It's like a blanket? Is that what you said?
I have absolutely no idea what
voice
to say
like a
that.
Blanket.
That was a great way to end the podcast.
A delightful vocal blanket.
So velvety.
ambient pregnancy editors.
Babies! Thousands of them!
Right. Right. Thank you. Bye-bye, pregos.
In that case, we can say cock instead.
Again, whatever you do in your private life.
I'm sorry, Andy. Something got into the AC, and we don't know what it is.
Oh, yes, we do.
Cock.
That's so going in.
No.
All right. Settle.
Is this transcribed correctly? Any clipped just saved your ass, Marine? I don't get that. It's in command second line. Damn it. It got a little freaky up here from down there. Any clipped just saved your ass, Marine?
Listen, Logan.
I might change that to clip.
Yeah. Does he mean binder clip?
You just read the lines, Logan.
Don't ask him about
save your ass, Marine.
I can't work with this.
That's what I saw.
That was freaking awesome. Sound effect work.
Seriously, Kristen comes out of nowhere with the Foley effects, man. That was awesome.
Unbelievable.
Nobody saw that coming. Nobody could have.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast listeners, it's Vagabond. Informing you that the PC Gamer Fan Podcast is now on iTunes. So if you like the PC Gamer Podcast and you're just itching for more, come check us out. We're also located at PCGamerFanPodcast.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening.